You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Well, I know we've both been working, but we've been sort of separated. You know, you've been working at your office, and I've been working in a different office. But have you been paying any attention to the impeachment hearing today?
You know, I only could listen when I, at the few times that I was in my car, which wasn't for long, I got rid of my TV that I used to have in the office. So I really just work. And I think I'm like most of America in that I just work and I don't have the time in the day to sit and watch the TV. Although I will say that I would love to hear it. I just am fascinated by the whole process.
Well, you know, after work today, I caught bits and pieces of it throughout the day because I was busy writing a report, but I caught some actually on PBS. So after my work day, I wanted to just watch a little bit of the television, and I didn't have access to the major networks where I was. And so, but I did have access to PBS. And so I was watching the actual video of the, you know, Senate hearings for the impeachment. And, man, I've just got a lot of questions myself. And, you know, one of the major questions that I had was about what is the role of the Chief Justice of the United States in the impeachment hearings. So I did a little bit of research. And the
I thought you were going to let me play the Chief Justice right now. Well, but go ahead.
Well, I was just going to codify. Okay, how about that word? Okay, so I was just going to codify in the United States Constitution where the job of the United States Supreme Court Justice is with regards to an impeachment hearing.
Okay.
So it goes way back. Okay, it goes back as far as the authorship of the Constitution found, Linda, in Article 1, Section 3, and Clause 6. And so that sort of sets down the areas of responsibility for a sitting United States Chief Justice. And but what I found I found remarkable about this particular impeachment, and, you know, I'm old enough to have followed the Nixon impeachment, you know, when I was in college, and then, you know, much later on, paying attention to the Bill Clinton impeachment. But this one is certainly kind of mind-boggling a little bit. But here's the deal. And this is just my opinion. So the Constitution sets down the responsibilities for the Chief Justice, but the persons that are really in control of the impeachment hearing is the Senate.
Yes.
And I don't know if a lot of people know that the majority of the Senate can overturn a ruling by the United States Chief Justice.
Yes, they can.
Wow. See, did you know that?
I did know that.
Wow. Okay, so I didn't know that. I got to be honest with you. I didn't know that at all. So I found that fascinating. But so now we have Chief Justice, you know, John Roberts, and he is sitting as the jurist in this case. And what I found interesting about it is I went back in doing a little studying on John Roberts, and I went back to his Senate confirmation hearing when he joined the Supreme Court. And he was asked what the role of a judge is during a trial. And he said that, and I'm going to quote, he said, the job of the judge is to make sure that everybody plays by the rules. And that sounds pretty good, right? Very
simple.
Very simple. Make sure everybody plays by the rules. But that's not what I saw today during the impeachment hearing. Now, first of all, a lot of people are referring to the impeachment hearing as a trial. As a matter of fact, I even heard Congressman Schiff refer to the hearing today as a trial. So everybody's referring it, to the impeachment hearing as a trial, but they're not treating it like a trial from where I sit. Because believe me, doing what I do for a living, I'm in court all the time, and I basically live in federal court, so I'm really used to the federal system of jurists presiding over federal cases. And this is not a trial.
No, but we've discussed this before, that it is a trial. It's an impeachment trial. But it is not the same as a criminal or a civil trial. It's not the same.
Well, okay. So I agree with you and I disagree with you a little bit. First of all, it's not a trial at all. It's a hearing.
Okay.
And then I agree with what you're saying, that it's not conducted like a trial. Because one of the things that bothers me is reconciling what Chief Justice Roberts said in his Senate confirmation hearing to the Supreme Court. And I quote again, the job of the judge is to make sure that everybody plays by the rules. And that's my experience in court, too. Judges make sure that everybody plays by the rules. But what I'm seeing is the Democrats are absolutely not playing by the rules. You and I know the evidence in this case, and we know the lack of evidence in this case. So anyway, what I'm seeing is that the Democrats are absolutely misrepresenting what the evidence is in this case and what the evidence isn't in this case. I would go so far to say, after hearing Congressman Adam Schiff, testify, if that's what you want to call it, a couple of times in response to questions, that what he was talking about had absolutely no relationship to what is truthful with regards to what the known facts of this case is against President Trump.
Well, the thing that I see...
And I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And Roberts didn't do anything to stop it.
No, he's letting them say whatever they want to say. And here's the difference. So again, from a layperson's point of view, from just an American citizen out here working, doing my job, and watching this from time to time, and I think that I'm in the majority of Americans in this case, okay? The embellishment of the things that are said is absolutely astounding to me. And I don't know that it's Robert's job to stop that.
Well, apparently not.
Yeah, apparently not.
Okay, because he certainly, I'm not saying that he's incompetent, and I'm not saying that he's biased. I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying how surprised I am for a guy that says, hey, look, the job of the judge is to make sure that people play by the rules, then we're watching people clearly not playing by the rules, and he's just sitting there and not doing anything. Well, but again, it's a hearing and not a trial.
But I assume that all these people are under oath.
Yes.
And if you can embellish the facts. So if you have fact A, B, and C in evidence, okay, and then you add in D, E, and F on your own, that's not allowed in a courtroom. You can't do that in a courtroom. There would be objections in a courtroom, and they would be sustained. So here, we're not seeing that. We're letting people say whatever it is that they choose to say, which is really interesting. And I guess that the feeling is that the Senate has to sift through all that and make their own decision.
No, you're exactly right. And you know what? Let me just push back on something that I said with regards to they're all under oath. No, I don't think they are under
oath. Maybe they're not under oath.
I think the only people that are under oath are any witnesses that come forward. But I don't think the managers on either team, Republicans or Democrats, are under oath. Because if they were under oath, they wouldn't say the ridiculous things that they're saying during the course of this hearing.
Well, I don't know. I know that they signed something to start with, and I don't remember what that was that they signed in the book to start with. I believe that they did take an oath.
Wow.
Beginning.
You know what? You know, we should just kind of research that.
Yeah, we'll research
and then
that.
Talk about that again in the future. But, you know, let me bring up something that that's been on my mind. You know, I love the fact that you said you come from the position of the average American, and that's what we are. We're average Americans, and we're paying attention to this. We probably pay attention to it a lot more than average Americans do, because you and I just love the study of politics. But do you believe that the American people basically at this point in time have sort of zoned out with
Yes.
this thing and they're just like just getting on with their lives? You know,
I'm amazed.
Interested at first,
yeah.
But then after watching this debacle, they pretty much moved on. What are your feelings?
My experience in talking to people, and you know, I talk to people a lot, and I am so curious. I talk to people in a grocery store or people when I'm in a restaurant. I talk to people and just ask questions. And I'm really amazed, Ron, that honestly, a lot of people that I talk to don't have any idea what's happening with this, nor do they really care. Okay, and if they do have an idea, probably more often than not, I would say that it's based on political bias and not on facts that they've heard because they haven't really paid attention to this. Again, most of America can't be engaged in this all day because they're working. So they catch the news bites at night. Now, I will say, just from the day that you and I are speaking at this moment, the liberal networks, the CNNs of the world, the MSNBCs, were 100% coverage of their coverage was against the president and for Schiff. They gloated over Schiff. They said how wonderful he was. The conservative networks were 95 to 100% is the figures I heard the other way, saying that the president's team did a great job. So there is a complete divide in this country, and it just depends on who you listen to in those nightly news bites.
Yeah, you know, I don't disagree at all. You know, what I found kind of interesting is that if I don't appear as a speaker on PBS, I almost never listen to it. I mean, you know, I'll do something if PBS calls me up or NPR calls me up or something and says, hey, can you help us with something? But by and large, I really don't watch it. But I watched PBS tonight, and I was gratified by they actually had a pretty fair and impartial coverage of what was going on in the impeachment hearing.
You know, and even I agree with you there.
Even their panel, okay? So they did the actual video. So we're, you know, watching everything that's happening in the taped proceedings. And then they had a panel of legal experts or
four
whatever.
People, two men,
yeah,
two women.
Okay, and you caught some of that. And I felt that that was pretty fair coverage. I didn't think anybody was really implicitly biased against the president or against the Democrats or anything. So I thought it was pretty interesting coverage.
You know, I also thought that their Capitol Hill reporter was interesting only because I also thought that she was pretty fair in the things she said. Here was somebody that reported what happened. Didn't add her opinion, didn't add a bias one way or the other, simply reported what happened. I thought that was pretty cool because you don't see that a lot anymore. And I don't care if we're talking about the liberal stations or the conservative
exactly.
stations. They're always with a slant. This really didn't have a slant, like you say, and I appreciate that. I just want to hear the news. And, you know, I wish that where we happen to be at this time that we could get One America News, because a lot of times you get that reporting that is very unbiased as well, but we weren't able to see that. So, you know, maybe we can catch that another time. But anyway, it's been very interesting. It's been an interesting process. We'll have to see how this plays out and what happens and, you know, whatever it is the country will have to deal with. I really don't think that the president is going to get impeached. I don't know if there's going to be witnesses. And I think we're going to have an election in a few months, and the country's going to decide how they felt about all this.
Right. And I think that's the most important thing. I think, of course, you know, I'm going to be very biased because I pretty much understand what the real objective facts are in this particular thing. And I think this is a huge waste of time. I think it's a waste of effort. I think it's a waste of money. I think it's all politically contrived to usurp the votes of 65 million Americans in their election of President Trump. You know, if you don't like the guy, then just vote him out of office 4 years later. And that's really historically the way we have handled things with regards to our presidents of the United States. Hey, if you don't like the guy, vote him out. If you don't like a senator or a congressperson, vote him out.
You know, I will say just one more thing about this impeachment thing. When Senator Rand Paul twice tried to ask a question that would ultimately reveal the whistleblower's name, and he was turned down by Justice Roberts, he was not able to ask the question, and he was very upset about that. I have done, you know, a pretty extensive amount of reading about this whole whistleblower thing, and this guy does not fall under the Whistleblower Act. He does not, what he does deserve, according to the Whistleblower Act, is no repercussion on his job or anything.
Correct.
Blowing the whistle.
Well, he gets the whistleblower protection in certain areas, but the predicate, wait a minute, the predicate has to be that he qualifies for the classification of whistleblower.
And he does not, but right. His name is not one of those protections.
Correct.
In this case.
Because he's not a real whistleblower.
So I resent Justice Roberts for not letting Senator Paul get to that, because he made a decision that was not consistent with what that Whistleblower Act is. And if he's a judge and a justice, he should know that.
Yeah, and here it goes, you know, back to my confusion and confliction with what a sitting Supreme Court justice should do during an impeachment hearing. Okay, I think it's nice to play middle of the road and make sure everybody follows the rules, but again, the predicate foundation is they have to follow the rules. And if they don't follow the rules, I think it's incumbent upon the Chief Justice of the United States, because you're sitting there in judgment, you're watching everything that's going on, and when people don't play by the rules, you gotta call it, okay? You just gotta call it, because if your intention is to keep things fair, then that's all part and parcel of that.
Right. And, you know, just in a little bit further political news that's going on, you know that Tulsi Gabbard had filed a $50 million lawsuit against Hillary Clinton for basically accusing her of being a Russian spy. Let's have a cup of coffee and we can talk about that.
Okay. This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the people. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Well, got us some Bailey's coffee, yum.
Yeah, I like it. I like the whole package that you got with all the different flavors.
Yeah.
So I'm doing the vanilla cinnamon, and it's pretty good.
Yeah, and I think I'm doing a salted caramel. Yum.
Yeah.
Anyway, Tulsi Gabbard is suing Hillary Clinton for $50 million for insinuating that she was kind of a Russian
asset.
Asset, yes.
And you know what? I'm no fan of hers, but I think that she is doing the right thing, and I'd love to see her win that lawsuit against Hillary Clinton. That was absolutely irreprehensible for Clinton to insinuate that.
Well, look what she's saying about Bernie, too. I mean, Clinton just cannot just go away quietly. She should have done that years ago. Just go away quietly and end your career.
Well, it's not in her nature.
No, but she's just making things not good. Anyway, so what's interesting is for all the things that the Clintons have done to other people, and I believe that there is just a boatload of them, the lawyers show up, the process servers show up with the lawsuit to the Clinton house and were turned away. And they would not accept service, and they were told to go give it to the lawyer. So obviously, they get on the phone to the lawyer, and so the process server goes to the lawyer, and the lawyer refuses service. Now, and you know this better than I.
I've been served a few times in my day.
It doesn't really matter if you accept service or not. If somebody testifies that they brought this paperwork and left it, you're served, dude.
Yeah, pretty much so. But what she does is really, she just makes it worse for herself. You know, as an expert, you know, we get served all the time. And because we are retained by attorneys, there is a protocol between attorneys on opposing sides that attorneys accept subpoenas on our behalf. And we, of course, obligingly show up. But what happens in a case like this, when Clinton and her attorney, which I think he made a stupid mistake, now what you're going to force the process server to do is track Clinton down when she's given a speech or she's somewhere, and I believe you me, that woman is going to get served. It'll be a public service instead of a private service, and it's going to be embarrassing for her. What a stupid thing for her to do, and a stupid thing for the attorney to do.
Well, and again,
she was not well served by that attorney. I will tell you that.
Let's just say, for argument's sake, that Clinton is standing at a podium, okay, and the process server walks up and hands it to her, and she will not accept it in her hand.
Oh,
all he's got to do is lay it on the podium and walk away.
It doesn't even matter. He can throw it at her feet.
Yeah.
It doesn't even matter. You're served.
So it's ridiculous to go through this. You know, just be gracious and accept the service.
Well, there's Linda, that's the key word. Hillary Clinton is a lot of things, but gracious is not one of those things. But look at what she causes. Guess who's talking about Hillary Clinton now that wasn't talking about Hillary Clinton yesterday?
Us?
Dr. Ron and Linda.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did I make my point?
But not in a good way.
Did I make my point?
Yeah. These are just tidbits of political things that are very interesting to me, just being a political being. And I love these two. One is that General Flynn has now rescinded his guilty plea.
Good
and
for
I
him.
Love that. I was
Good
hoping that he would. And now he is coming back at the people that were coming at him.
And he should.
And he should. And I love that, because I didn't want to see these people just walked over the way that they were. And Carter Page is another one.
Yeah.
Who...
I'm glad you brought up Carter Page, because mm-hmm. now he's suing the DNC.
Yes. And they did so much damage to him. And by the way, Carter Page, and through all the time that we've been hearing about Carter Page, has really kept his mouth shut about himself. He is a CIA agent. And that never was brought out, because he was, you know, pretty much undercover.
Yeah, under the radar screen.
So they, right. So now you know, and look what they did, and now it's coming back to bite them, and I hope it bites them big time. I hope this guy makes a fortune. He lost a tremendous amount by what they did to him.
Oh, sure. His career is ended.
Well, he may not need a career after he gets done with them.
I agree with you. You know, one door closes and another door opens, And there's the whole rebranding process, and I think he's going to end up good. But you know what I am really hoping for? Once we get past this impeachment, and I truly believe, and I've made this prediction before during our discussions, I think President Trump is going to win re-election. I think he's going to win re-election even at a greater percentage than last time. I mean, if these rallies that he's holding are any evidence of his popularity, and of course, you and I, and I think most Americans don't even believe the polls, all these polls that come out, because look at how they screwed up last time, and it's too early to even poll anything right now, except to keep people's interest up. But I'm hoping that after all of this is done and President Trump is reelected, he is going to make a point of turning loose the Department of Justice, not for vindictiveness, but for investigation and getting to the bottom of all of this stuff that's been going on with regards to the deep state. Because we have really, as Americans, we can't have a specter like the deep state. We can't have it in a democracy. You just can't have it. It reminds me of Nazi Germany.
Do you remember, Ron, the article that I wrote about that our Senate and our Congress are kind of like bad parents, and they give a bad example to the children, which would be all the people in the United States. If the people in the Congress and the Senate would get along like adults, like normal human beings, and discuss their differences, work them out, compromise, the entire country would be more united. We are not united, not because of the people on the street, but because of the people in office. And they try to make it look like it's the other way, that they're just representing. That's not true at all, because I guarantee you, Ron, in Adam Schiff and Nancy Pelosi's districts, they would much rather have them cleaning up the streets and the homeless off their streets than going through what they're going through now. They're not doing the people's work. And how those people act, so goes the country. And need to get legislators that are more mature and more for America and not for themselves.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to just mention a couple of really quick things. You know, in the first part of our conversation, you know, we're talking about the impeachment, and we didn't get a chance to talk about Rhino Republicans or moderate Republicans, you know, sitting on the fence or deciding whether there's going to be witnesses or not witnesses. And I think we're talking about, you know, four or five different senators that are Republican senators. And what really bothers me about this is if they had paid attention to the House's presentation of their case against President Trump, and there was clearly no case against President Trump, then why are we going through this right now? The only reason that we're going through this, Dr. Ron's opinion here, is that they are worried about their own butts.
Okay? Oh, absolutely.
So instead of worrying about, but this speaks to your comment, Linda, instead of worrying about the United States of America and the people and the welfare of the United States of America, the safety, the security, the economy of the United States of America, and the polarization that they've created, I agree with you 100%, you hit the nail right on the head. What are they doing? They're trying to cover their own butts. That's the only reason why they're vacillating on this thing, and we have to worry about them. They're not doing it for the American people. They're doing it for themselves.
Well, they are. And, you know, it's what we've talked about before, and what I still think is that they're doing it for that reason, because Trump and William Barr are getting too close to finding out how swampish they are and their secrets and their crimes, and they don't want that. And by getting President Trump out of office, they would get everybody else related to him out of office, and then they could go on their merry way
and make their money and have their conflicts of interest. You know, the other thing is, and you know, we just recently returned from Mexico, and President Obrador is newly elected president there, been in office about a year now. And one of the things that I found interesting and admirable about the Mexicans, the way that they are doing running their government, is even the opposition party is joining with Obrador's party because they see something good in this president, and they're working together, bipartisan, to move the country of Mexico forward. And I've always said that Mexico is a second world nation. It's not a first world nation, and it's certainly not a third world nation. But isn't it interesting where I personally find that we can learn something from the Mexican politicians?
You know, we can actually learn something from a lot of the Mexican people, in that when I go into that country, what I see is really a lot of happy people.
Yeah.
It's pretty, what we call muy tranquilo over there. And, you know, not in all areas. Of course, the border areas are pretty ugly, and there's some terrible, terrible things going on. You know, I'm a huge advocate against child trafficking, and there's just a tremendous amount, and the drugs. The people that have ever been in a position in their life to see the damage that those drugs do to people, as we have had that opportunity to see, you know, on the job, and just see the changes in people and the things that they do and the way that they live, you just can't be for this. That's why it boggles my mind that so many people think that we should have these open borders.
Yeah. Well, you know, you kind of went in a different direction. But it's okay, you know.
Take me back.
No, not really. I mean, I kind of like the direction the conversation's going right now. And so, did you, speaking of the drug problem and this stuff that we're talking about right now, and just how dangerous the drugs are, especially the fentanyl that's coming out of Mexico, it has the possibility of killing millions of people. And, you know, we talked about on the Mexican side, they lose about 100,000 people a year in the drug wars and people disappearing and, you know, all of the stuff that goes on. But also in the United States, we lose over 80,000 people a year in drug overdoses. And fentanyl is killing thousands of people. So my point is, Linda, is that did you see the article just the other day in New York City where they caught those 7 fentanyl traffickers? All of them are Mexicans, and I'm sure they belong to a cartel. They had enough fentanyl to dose 7 million people.
Oh my gosh.
All right? And the judge let them off without bail.
Well, that's their new kinder, gentler policy.
That's this new restorative justice mm-hmm. issue and the no bail issue, and the judge let all 7 of those people, none of whom are American citizens, okay, he let them off on their own recognizance.
Well,
and what do you think of that?
I'm quite sure, Ron, that they will show up for their court date, don't you think?
Oh my God. I'm telling you, you got enough dope, fentanyl, to kill 7 million people. And the judge lets these guys and gals, lets them go because he doesn't think that they are a risk to society, to American society. Are you kidding me? Where do these people live?
Somebody has to put a stop to this. I don't know who that somebody is, because judges seem to be pretty untouchable. But some of the things that they're doing like this are so egregious to the American people. There just has to be a way to put an immediate end to this. There shouldn't be. Somebody should sue that they cannot make those kinds of rules.
Well, you know, I call these people activist judges, but there's also activist prosecutors. And I want to talk about the newly elected district attorney of the city and county of San Francisco, this Chase Budin.
Oh, Nancy's okay. Area.
All right. And I'm going to tell you what, This guy's only 40 years old. He used to be the public defender of the city and county of San Francisco. Now they voted him in as the district attorney. He's one of these ridiculous restorative justice idiots. And the guy has got one heck of a parental background. Okay, so his adoptive parents, and you've heard this name before, Bill Ayers, and you've also heard this Bernadette Dorn.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and these people are from our era. These were Weather Underground terrorists. Okay, their organization, the Weather Underground, killed police officers, blew police officers up, okay, with bombs. Bill Ayer, a bomber. Bernadette Dorn, a bomber. Absolutely just incredibly dangerous people.
And friends of Obama.
I don't know about Dorn, but for sure Bill Ayers gave former President Obama his first meeting and to raise money for Obama when he ran for president. That's a whole nother story, though. But so my point is that this guy Bowden has now ended cash bail for all criminal offenses in the city and county of San Francisco, and he's only judging people based on risk to the community. To me, he's taking the job of judge away, and he is making a decision instead of a judge on whether people should be released back into our community who are suspects, arrested suspects of crime. What do you think about that?
You know, the first thing that came to my mind when you said that was that he's playing God. It may not be that serious, but really anything that plays with American citizens' lives by these people who continue to let criminals out is so unacceptable to me. And I don't know how we can stop it and what the mechanism is that American people can use other than to get people voted out.
Well, you know, I'll leave you with this one thought, because recently there was a man that was burglarizing an apartment in San Francisco, and then he left the apartment, started vandalizing, breaking into cars. The police had a description of him. They stopped him in the Mission District, and there's a incredible videos. One is an overhead like traffic video. The other one are body cam videos from the officers. They try to stop the guy. They pull up next to the guy, and he immediately rushes the passenger officer. He's got a vodka bottle in his hand, and he starts beating the officer over the head with this vodka bottle, and then starts to run away. The officer gets out of the car. He's struck a couple of times more by this guy, fractured the man, fractured the officer's skull, and then took off. The officers tried to pepper spray him. They tried to hit him with a baton. They missed. The guy came back to attack the partner officer, and then both officers, even the guy with the fractured skull, I believe, they fired on this guy, and they put him down. They didn't kill him, but they seriously injured him. Guess what this district attorney, Chasey Bodine, did? He doesn't file charges against this guy. This guy is free to walk out of that hospital, and he's investigating the officers for the officer-involved shooting. Is that not incredible? Before we have our next cup of coffee, I just want to leave you with that thought.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Well, I can't let you get away with that last comment about what was happening in San Francisco without saying something. What are the people in San Francisco thinking in the way that they vote? This is one of the richest communities in the country with the highest housing prices in the country, or one of the highest housing prices. You pay a fortune just to rent a shoebox there. And they are allowing all these homeless people to live on their streets and leave feces and needles. And their answer to that is to hire people and pay them to poop scoop. Okay.
Well, speaking of that, the guy that's in charge of that entire program, did you see they just arrested him?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
See that.
For bribes and public corruption.
Yes.
And I think they got him on like 10 counts of this. Okay. And by the way, this guy's been doing this, allegedly been doing this or having problems since back in 2003. Okay. So here we are in 2020. And apparently they make some major cases against this guy. But this is what San Francisco's become. And, you know, I was born and raised in San Francisco. And it used to be a beautiful city. I mean, it used to be fun. I used to love to take dates when I was young through San Francisco and do all the really cool, you know, fun tourist things with them.
There were others before me?
There were others before you,
oh,
Linda.
Dear.
I'm sorry. And you know what? I've taken you to San Francisco and you hated it.
I don't care.
And then, of course,
it.
You and me both are ever since Kate Steinle, that horrible debacle by the city and county of San Francisco, the sanctuary city. You know, we just boycotted the city of San Francisco. I don't care if I ever return there. But I can't understand how people that are paying so much money to live in that city would vote for an idiot, a dangerous district attorney, you know, this Bodine guy.
I can't even fathom why they would do that, and it would be so interesting to talk to people and see why they would do
they
that.
I don't think they know. I think they see Democrat, and what they do is they click the button there.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, he's a Democrat. He's going to do good for us. Are you kidding me? Look at what the city looks like.
Well, and you know, just look around the country and look at the cities with the worst problems, and they are Democrat-run cities. But San Francisco in particular is a unique place, Ron. It's unique because there's so much Silicon Valley people that live near there. There's so much money there. There's so many high-powered jobs there and so much high rent there. And for these people to not vote these people out and to let this kind of thing happened to their city is absolutely a shame.
Well, here's something that's kind of crazy. You know, every agency investigates officer-involved shootings, okay? They all have a team, homicide team, and an internal affairs team that comes in and investigates officer-involved shootings. Sometimes they'll send out, they'll go to like California Department of Justice, or they might go to the Department of Justice, FBI, to investigate their officer-involved shootings. But larger cities investigate their own officer-involved shootings. What this guy has done is removed the San Francisco Police Department. This is what I'm hearing, okay? He's removed the San Francisco Police Department from investigating officer-involved shootings, and now the district attorney's office is the sole investigative body for officer-involved shootings, okay? And now you've got a guy that was the adoptive son of two of the most prominent cop-killing terrorists in the United States during the 70s, and this is the guy that's the district attorney who used to be the public defender. My mind is just reeling trying to figure out the mentality of people that would have voted this guy in.
Here would be my suggestion to all the officers in San Francisco.
Leave.
Find another job.
Absolutely.
Because
I'm
guess what? You.
You
can move to another state
where you can be appreciated.
Where you cannot have a shoebox to live in, and you can have a big house for the same price as that shoebox and raise your kids in a place that is safer and doesn't have
poop and needles and
exactly
crazy homeless people running all
around. And where they're not releasing everybody so that they can victimize your children. I mean, get out of there.
All right. Well, there you go.
Anyway, speaking of California, you know, we just arrived last night.
Had the RV with the dog and came out from Texas because we've got a couple of weeks of business here.
Yes.
And did you notice as soon as we crossed the Colorado River, because we came in on Interstate 10, you can see an immediate change in the roadways between Texas and New Mexico and Arizona coming, which all have wonderful roadways. And we didn't see hardly any litter. We saw zero graffiti. And as soon as you cross the California border, which is the Colorado River, mm-hmm. and you pass through that inspection station, and God knows why they have those inspectors there, because they just wave everybody through. But as soon as you get into California, crappy roadways, filled with litter, and it's actually dangerous.
Well, and you know, for me, it's the worst part of the drive. But the thing is, you know, this governor in California,
Newsom,
he just is, he's so bad for California. And, you know, being away from California and kind of looking at it from a longer view,
right.
you just really see it more than when you were embroiled in,
yeah.
in living in California.
Yeah.
So Proposition 13 and is one that he's trying to, you know, get rid of right now as far as another tax grab, and then the gas tax.
Well, exactly. Mm-hmm. So the former, well, it's not former because it's currently in play, but the people a couple of years ago voted for Proposition 69. And what Proposition 69 was is a funding source. In other words, they voted to increase their gas tax. So stupid Californians trusting the, you know, and he wasn't governor at the time. Jerry Brown was, I think, governor at the time. There might have been Newsom. I can't remember. He's only been governor for a short period of time. I think this is his first year. But anyway, the point is that the stupid California governor voters believed their government, and they voted for this gas tax, which was strangely written, if you remember. It was kind of like, if you're voting no, you're saying yes.
Yes.
If you're voting yes, you're saying no.
And they do that on purpose. But I would just want to correct you on one thing. The gas tax had been voted on prior, and it was temporary, and it was to expire. And Jerry Brown decided that he was going to get it extended by doing this kind of fake way of writing it so that people thought that if they didn't vote for it, that the roads were going to get worse.
So, okay.
Yeah, so they voted for it again to keep their gas tax, which is ridiculous, and...
But it was designed specifically to fix the roadways, okay? The decrepit, decaying roadways, especially on what they refer to as freight corridors, okay? And you know what a freight corridor is. It's something like Interstate 10, uh-huh. Highway 101, Interstate 5, and Highway 99. And this is where you see all the 18-wheelers, millions of them, going up the roadway full of freight. And these are called freight corridors. And so, you know, those big trucks, because they're so darn heavy, they wreck the roadways. And so what this was designed to do was repair the roadways, new infrastructure, new roadways that would be safer for everybody like us to drive on. And the 69 part of it, the Prop 69 part of it, was to create a kitty, right? A lockbox for that money, so the money could not be used on anything else but roadways.
Because Californians were afraid that the governor would steal the money and use it somewhere else and not fix the roads.
Well, guess what he did?
He stole the money.
Exactly. He stole the money. He created an executive order, and he took that money, and what he did was he moved it into rail projects.
Which would be a key word for his bullet train to nowhere.
And metro, right? So bullet train to nowhere and metro. And so instead of giving the people who, would you agree with me that probably 97% of all the people in California use cars and they don't use the metro system.
Oh, absolutely.
And nobody's using the bullet train because it hasn't even been built, really. Okay? And so they were counting on that money to be fixing these these corridor roadways, right? These freight corridors. And that's not what's going to happen at all. So again, the people of California have literally no say in how their government is run and their tax monies are spent.
Even though they vote on it and they tell the government what to do with that money that they are paying out of their hard-earned dollars, they steal it. And again, California needs to rethink about how they vote.
And you know what, Linda, you started out with Proposition 13, and I sort of interrupted you a little bit, but let's go over, you know, Proposition 13 and kind of the history of Proposition 13, because we were in California when Proposition 13 passed, and I think it was like 1978. It's been around for a while.
Yeah, it's been around for a while.
And I think it said that you get taxed 1% of the sales price of your house.
Right.
And that is the tax you pay every single year.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And now what the governor is doing and the legislature in California is they're trying to get rid of Proposition 13. I don't know what the name of the new proposition is, but it deals with basically retaxing commercial properties.
Reassessing them.
Thank you. That's the word I'm looking for.
At a higher level. Now, it is commercial properties and it is businesses. And people,
but I think that's a foothold, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And people think that this won't affect them unless they're a business owner or a property owner that
is
like a renter. But that is totally wrong because when, let's just take where I lease my offices. When my landlord gets those increases, I will get increases.
Absolutely. He's going to pass that right on to you.
And those increases are going to affect my ability to hire, my ability to give raises, all those things. So it is definitely going to affect everybody in the state. And it's a ruse in how they're writing it on the ballot. It's already going to be on the ballot. Well, it's already been approved to be on the ballot.
Right,
this
and
November.
Becerra, and that snake, that attorney general in California, Becerra, has personally rewritten that proposition. And it is so confusing. And if you look at it, it looks like you're paying for schools. And so going back to the old schools and everything like that, right? We're going to upgrade the schools, upgrade the education in the schools. And so you think you're paying for schools. That's not what you're paying for at all. And do you remember years ago when they passed gambling and they allowed gambling in California, like the Indian gaming, and then they had the lottery, right? So the lotto, the California lotto. Wasn't 85% of that money supposed to go into school funding, and they were supposed to make so much money doing that that we weren't ever going to be paying school taxes again? Do you remember how they sold that 20 or 30 years ago?
That's exactly how they sold that, and that was another bait and switch.
And they didn't get it hardly any of that money.
What they did is they, so the money that they had for the schools, they then took the lottery money. So let's just use let's say that they had $1 million for the schools and they had $1 million come in on the lottery. Okay, so now your schools are going to have $2 million. No, what they did is they took that original money that was for the schools because they promised the lottery money to the school. So they took that and they reallocated it to other places and school didn't get one penny more.
That's exactly
in reality.
Right. That's exactly right.
And every year that I have been alive, every year that I had lived in California, it would be on the ballot that our kids didn't have enough money in the schools and they couldn't get paper and they couldn't get pencils and they couldn't get phonics and they couldn't get, and it's just such a lie. And again, teachers unions, extremely strong union. I mean, they really kind of kicked the butt of
well, the CTA, the California Teachers Association, is a huge, powerful lobby.
Yeah, of Arnold Schwarzenegger. That's what really brought him down. But I'm just saying that they're dishonest in how they put things. Californians need to pay attention and really think about how they're voting and really pay attention to what the truth is because the TV ads are bogus.
Well, I will tell you, and I don't think it's a big secret, that if they manage to get this new proposition through, they fooled the California public, the voters, and they passed this proposition, this is a foothold to destroy Proposition 13, and I'm telling you, it's the beginning of the end of the middle class, because they cannot afford, mm-hmm. and retired people, mm-hmm. because retired people are not going to be able to afford, those people on fixed incomes are not going to be able to afford the insane property taxes that are going to result in from this.
This okay? is going to cause...
And the middle class is going to go.
It's going to cause a crash, I believe, in California, in real estate and things like that. I think that they are totally going in the wrong direction. And I feel that this governor is the worst thing to ever happen in California. He is a train wreck happening every day for California.
You know, we're Governor Moonbeam Brown was just a total idiot.
Yes.
Okay, and before that, don't forget, we had Gray Davis, and they recalled Gray Davis, who was
a total idiot.
This guy is the guy, this Gavin Newsom is the guy that scares me the most, because he's young, he's a good-looking guy, and he's smart. Okay, he's wily like a fox, and I'm telling you, 2024, this guy's already grooming himself to run for president of the United States. Can you even imagine what a guy like this would be like running for president of the United States?
This guy, in my mind, Ron, and I don't have a dog in the fight anymore
because
I don't live here, but to me, he is an evil politician. He is not just wily like a fox. He is evil and does not work to the benefit of the people. He works against the benefit of the people, and I cannot understand what's in his mind.
But don't forget, he's empowered by this very liberal, democratic legislature that they have in the state of California. People need to I agree with you very much, Linda. People have got to rethink the future of California, and it is not with the Democratic Party. Look at what has happened to this city, or this state. When I come back into this state, and we have to do it often, every time I come here, I feel like I'm in a different country.
Look at what Governor Abbott has done for the state of Texas, and look to that to emulate in California, and your greatness in California will come back.